Now, adjust the volume control so that the sound can be heard in all parts of the room.
This is the Protect Your Assets podcast.
Mr. Sandman,
you get the idea?
Bring me a dream.
It's on the internet.
Make him the cutest that I've ever seen.
Go on.
Give him two lips like roses and clover.
It's a great program.
And tell him that his lonesome nights are over, Sandman.
What is it?
It's exactly what I need.
It's a slam dunk.
It's great.
It's like no cheese I've ever tasted.
Please turn on your magic beat.
Here he comes.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a key.
Here's David Hollander.
You've worked hard the last 20 or 30 years at it. You're now finally making some profits and able to stick some money away. What am I talking about? Your small business. Is now the time to sell it and cash out? Well, selling your business could be one of the most important decisions of your life. And if you're thinking of selling your business, then you need an exit strategy so you don't make a huge mistake. Clear your schedule for the next hour as I walk you through things you need to consider before you put your business up for sale. I'm David Hollander, your host, and this is Protect Your Assets. For those of you just joining us for the first time, welcome. People around here, you can hear the jingle. I'm the Sandman, and that's because I help my listeners sleep well at night by answering their most troubled legal or financial questions every single week. And that's because I am a financial advisor, been running a financial firm for just about 30 years, been practicing law here in California. Boy, the stories we see every week, it's just a lot of fun. You know, It's just interesting. Let's put it that way. It keeps life in perspective. So if you own a business and you're thinking about what the next chapter may look like for you, you know, life after running your business, then you're going to definitely want to listen to today's show. I'm going to put it out there. This show is all about removing the uncertainty around that decision. You've had your head down maybe the last 10, 20, maybe even 30 years building your business. You've taken the risk. You've leveraged your assets, maybe even put bills on the credit cards. And when times were tough, you did that so you could keep your staff employed. And now that things are better in the economy, let's put it that way, maybe you're making some profits. And your business is looking pretty good. And then out of nowhere, you get a call from some private equity guy or a competitor, and they want to buy your business. Well, how do you prepare for something like that? What steps do you need to take right now before you start that conversation in seriousness with that person or that company? Or what do you need to do to know what you have to do before you actually close the deal? Maybe you're in a deal right now and you haven't closed yet. Well, there's lots of things you need to prepare for before that day when that big check hits your bank account. It's not that, it could be that simple. I've come across people who are in the middle of the deal and they don't know what they're doing. I just hear the big dollar sign and then they're there. So listen, if you're fearful, if you're feeling unclear or anxious about this decision, your future, that's because you don't have a crystal clear plan for each step of what this is going to look like. And yeah, I'm talking about before and most importantly, after the sale. And that uncertainty makes you fearful, and fearfulness breeds doubt, hesitation. You may pull out of the deal. And this could also cause you to make some pretty bad decisions as you're going along the transaction. And unfortunately, after the transaction, like I said, you get this big chunk of money, you become, I don't want to say like an athlete, but I've seen that happen a lot. I've worked with a lot of athletes. They get a big chunk of $50 million contract, whatever. What do? They run out and buy a Bentley and a big house and a ring for their friend. And you know what I mean? You know, this stuff happens. So all of a sudden you're wealthy. Okay, well, anyways, we have your antidote today. It's your booster shot, if you want to call it that. Well, it's the first dose, at least, on today's show, because we're going to walk you through exit strategies for business owners when you're ready to sell. Now, let's get started. Yep, it was a exciting week to kick off the market. Then it sort of tapered off here towards the end. Dow was off 1.1%, S&P off 0.6, NASDAQ off 0.7. 10-year flat, didn't do anything again. So the 10-year's been just sitting there at 1.26%. Think about that. If you give your money to the federal government for 10 years, what's the best you can do? 1.26%. Boy, isn't that exciting? That's not even keeping up with inflation. Oil, $61.88 a barrel. This week, some interesting things happened. Let's talk about this. First, like I talk about a lot, we're always looking to see if we can predict the future. It's not easy, but there are some things we look at to see that. Now, the first is the 10-year treasury compared to the 2-year. And we compare the yield curve spread, so the difference between those two yields, it's called the spread, to see what's going on, because that could be an indicator that we're entering into some trouble. Now, as we talked about last week, if you missed last week's discussion and the week before that, you can get your economic briefing by checking out my podcast. And at my podcast, which is at pyaradio.com, pyaradio.com, or on your smart speaker, you can say, hey, Google, connect to protect your assets, and then look for the market segment. But they're about 5-7 minutes. And if you want some economic history on what's going on right now, this is happening now. Stagflation and possible market pullback. Why? Okay, for the 10-2 is something I spoke about last week. It was sitting right around a 1% spread. And then last week it started to rise, which is a good sign. Went up to 1.15. Well, guess what? This past week, it pulled back again. And that could be a problem, back to 1.04. So again, not a big, you know, huge steepening retreat, but this could be an ominous sign for the future of the recovery and stocks in particular. Now, this past week, economic data gave us insight once again into the stagflation environment. And if you want to know what stagflation is, go listen to my podcast. Now, what are some things I saw this past week? Well, the University of Michigan, remember I talk about this once a month, their consumer confidence, well, guess what? It suffered the largest drop since April of last year. Remember what happened in April? So March and April last year, 2020, were pretty bad. We just saw that again. And this fell to the lowest level in the number terms since 2011. Mm-hmm. And it went from 70.2 down, It went from 81.3 down to 70.2. So that was a drop. It was a pretty significant drop. And that was because of the Delta variant. That's what caused that to happen. So that's cautionary. That's something that makes me pay attention. And then also you have something called the University of Michigan inflation expectation component. This is consumers talking about inflation, and they have a 1-year and a 5-year. And when we look at this number, it causes us, again, some pause, some concern if things happen. So on the 1-year, the decline was super slight. It went from 4.7 down to 4.6. That's not a big deal. I'm not really worried about that. But the 5-year, which I talk about a lot, which is much more important because it looks past this recovery. If you think about it, this recovery has been driven by the four things I talk about, the four pillars, the vaccine, the stimulus, the historic Fed, the opening economic recovery. All these things are propping up the markets. If one of those start to fail, then the markets come down. And that's what this 5-year looks at. It looks out past that. Well, it rose. The indicator that we looked at went from 2.8 up to 3. And you remember 3% and really north of that was when I started getting concerned. So we're getting close, folks. We're right in that line. And that's what's so fascinating about what's happening right now. This Fed is really doing a historic job to keep the market informed about what they're up to, because they don't want to have any surprises like we saw back in 2013. Because if you remember back to 2013, we had that taper tantrum. Remember that whole taper tantrum thing? Well, that's what they're trying to avoid this time. And they're doing a pretty good job, because we haven't seen it yet. Because if you actually look at the market, there's only been 11 1% down days. And one of them just happened this last Wednesday. Wednesday was kind of tough. Remember that on the S&P 500. But we've only seen 2 4% pullbacks this year. And of course, we see stocks bouncing around at all-time highs right now. And that's because of this job that the Fed is doing. They're doing a pretty good job. And if you look back at 2013, when they announced the taper reduction, the S&P had a 4% plus pullback immediately when that started to happen. So those are the sort of things the Fed's doing a pretty good job right now. But I think this is a little different, the economy we're in right now. First of all, back then, unemployment was around 7.5%. Right now it's 5.4, so that's good. Also, GDP was running around 2%. Obviously, we've just seen the most historic GDP numbers we've ever seen, and that's because of the opening up these last 12 months. So it's been a different time. That's all I can say. And so the next event that we have to watch out for will be Jackson Hole, and that's where the Fed, particularly Mr. Powell, comes out and starts talking about what he's going to be doing. So that this next week, you definitely want to be paying attention to that. I don't expect anything colossal coming out of there, but all of us are thinking that that's the first time, when he's with all these other leaders around the world, that they're going to start talking about this sort of tapering and how they're going to do it by not buying as many bonds. And the number we've been hearing floating around is about $15 billion a month starting in December. That's the tapering. That's what we're looking at. So I'm here to tell you this morning, don't fear the taper. Don't fear the Reaper, Blue Oyster Cult. Remember that song? So that's where we are right now. And so next week, you definitely want to be paying attention to that. We're going to be looking at personal consumption, the numbers that show how much everyone's buying out there. And then income, too. Income's important. You want to make sure you're making enough money to keep pace with what's going on. Now, if you're considering selling your privately owned business, then you need to find out what specific steps you should be considering right now before you enter into the letter of intent, also known as the LOI. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Show with David Hollander. That's me. We'll be right back.
You can ask the Sandman questions and hear this show protect your assets hands-free anytime on your Amazon Echo smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, ask Protect Your Assets to play the latest podcast. Find out more at libertygroupllc.com/voice. Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman. Reach out,
touch base. Welcome back. I'm David Hollander, also known as the Sandman, and you're listening to Protect Your Assets. If you own a business and you're thinking about what the next chapter may look like for you, you know, life after running your business, waking up every morning, working all those hours, well, you're definitely want to stay tuned the entire show today, because we're sharing how business owners can prepare for retirement before they sell their privately owned business. All right, so if you're looking for the right exit strategy at the right price, well, you're in the right place. And the first thing you need to do is understand, what's your company worth? Often the business is probably the largest financial asset you have, and the decision to sell it could have some pretty big financial ramifications after it's all said and done. I've seen this, just waking up one day or getting that phone call where someone throws a lot of money at you all of a sudden, and you decide you're going to sell at a moment's notice. That could be a really, really big mistake. I'm not saying don't do it, but I'm saying you just got to immediately pull the ripcord, pull a brake, do something to slow yourself down so you start to go through this mental process that I'm going to walk you through right now. Now, one of the things you could do to get ready to sell your business is to make a plan that walks you through each step of what that would look like if you haven't even considered it yet. But if you're in the middle of it right now, or you just got a phone call and you're thinking about it, a business attorney is somebody you want to reach out to. It'd be nice, too, if they had an accountant on their team and a financial planning professional to work as a group to figure out what you're going to do here. And it starts out with them, that group, or one of those individuals who's experienced in this, figuring out what is your business worth? Is it worth selling it? A lot of service industries. Huh. Okay. Hey, Brandon, what's up? what is the business worth? So a lot of service industries sell for about 2 to 3 times their gross earnings or EBITDA. You hear this term. I'll explain that a little bit later. But that's how you can start to figure out what they're worth, as you look at the earnings and you start to do a multiple based on the industry to figure out what you could sell it for. Now, some businesses, just again, depending on what sort of industry they're in, could sell for less or more than that multiple. It really depends on the industry you're in. And figuring out what is your particular business going to sell for when you clean it up. Because once you make that decision that you're going to sell it, the first thing that we look at is your books, because those books need to get cleaned up. And let's face it, a lot of business owners, yes, it's important. Of course, we focus on that. We may hire other people to do that work for us because you may not be really good at that. And if you are good at that, usually your business is not that great, right? Because if you just sit all this time focusing on spreadsheets and all that sort of stuff, maybe you're not such a great business person. If your business is doing really well, again, I'm just speaking in generalities. You could be that great of a person at everything. Some people are. But I find that usually the more entrepreneurial, bigger personality type person, you know what I mean? The lead singer in the band, like think about Sting, like people like that, even though they're very talented and they have other members like Stuart Copeland on the Police, who is an incredible drummer, right? Who rose to fame and fortune? Well, it was Sting. I mean, let's face it. So that's, it's not a matter of talent. It takes some sort of charisma or whatever you want to call it, that helps that business drive. So again, I'm making big generalities here because maybe you're just really smart and you figured out something great and now it's worth a lot of money and you're thinking of cashing in. It happens. But if your books are in really good shape on top of that, well, good for you. But I'd say 90% of the people we meet with, the books need some cleaning up. So what do we start with? The first thing we do is we dive into that is this, and you're not going to like this, but your personal expenses, you know, like the car, the company cell phones for you and your family and all the other stuff, marketing, whatever you're doing, you know, that's usually paid for or put through the company because it can, you know, let's face it, you're using it for business, but then the buyer is not going to be paying that for you. So the first thing we do is we separate that. We separate those specific business owner expenses from the rest of the company expenses from the P&L, profit and loss statement, immediately. And with those costs removed, think about it this way, your gross income should do what? It should go up. And what that does is it gets you a higher price when you go to sell it because now the buyers are seeing better economics. Okay. And that will help you get a better idea of what your expenses are going to be when you retire. Because that's what's going to happen when you sell this, right? You're going to at some point be done with it. And then you'll be living off of a fixed income and what you sold it for after taxes, of course. So the next thing we do after we start to go through that is we would probably hire an outside CPA or accounting firm to perform an audit. And we do that especially if you're doing the books yourself, because this outside review from a firm could give the buyer who's coming in more confidence in your company's overall financial performance. And the firm that we would hire or work with would do what's called quality reports. And these reports, I will tell you, usually towards the middle or the end of the transaction, usually towards the end. This is a very stressful thing. Let me just tell you that. You're gonna put tons of hours in for about 2 to 3 weeks towards close, and you're going to be wiped out. It's going to be extremely emotional, tense. I'm just preparing you for what's coming if you're thinking about this. It's not all about just the big dollar sign, bam, we're done. No, it's a lot of work. And so these reports, these quality reports, believe me, the buyer's attorneys are going to ask for them, and they're going to go through them, and they're going to ask you a lot of questions about them. And so you want to make sure you're on top of that game and that they're clean, they look good, you know the answers to these things. And it also gives you an expert to refute any of the, you know, buyer's concerns, if you will, that they're going to bring up during that transaction. Because as they're doing their due diligence, which is what they're going to do before they close and pay you, is they're going to really tear through this stuff. So if you don't have help with that, what you're doing is you're going basically to a gun battle unarmed. All right. It's literally that simple. So don't do that. It's a bad mistake. And if in terms of timing, how long will this take? Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, I've seen it happen anywhere from 2 months, which is pretty quick. And we've done them. We've done 2 month transactions. But I've seen them go as long as 5 years because some of these businesses are super complex. Takes a lot of time. Right now, everyone's super busy. So, you know, that's kind of an outside window for you in terms of timing. And so I would encourage you to start this process early, because what that does is it gives you time to adjust, which ultimately translates to a better sales price. Now, this economic environment we're in right now might be the best time for you to sell. And so what we want to do is we want to go through our checklist, make sure that you have your employees sign confidentiality agreements, make sure your vendor contracts are in line, make sure that you're organized, and that all these things are available electronically, because we're going to have to produce all these things. And you also want to make sure you have an insurance policy in place that protects the personal assets of the directors and the officers in a lawsuit if that were to happen, because guess what? They're going to demand it. Might be part of the contract. Buying some sort of an indemnification contract. These things can cost up to $200,000, $300,000 for a contract like that. That comes out of the selling price, and you're going to pay for it. So it's really important to get all of this cleaned up before you put it on the market. Think about selling a house. If you're going to sell your house right now, what do? Well, you stage it, you paint it, you clean it up, maybe you mow the lawn, right? You do all those things that you've been wanting to do all these years to fix it. So when the new buyers walk in, it looks great, right? They pay you more money. So that's what this is about. Now, also the letter of intent, the LOI, that's super important. And don't just have them, you know, send you one without having some thought put into it before that comes out, because that is usually the precursor to the contract, which again, we're going to go through in some pretty specific detail. So I know you're busy right now, and I want to ask you, do you have the time right now to get all this in order? Well, I recommend starting the conversation or getting this stuff in order before you sell, because that can get you more money. You really worked hard to build this. You know that. And once you sell, you have to know this. How do you convert that chunk of money after tax into income that's going to pay you every month until you pass away, and then leave a large part of that legacy for your family instead of the government? I talk about this all the time. Taxes, in my opinion, are going up. Estate taxes are going to change. They're going to go down, meaning you're going to pay more. And so you've got to work harder now to hang on to this money, just the way it is. Now, coming up next, it's time for our popular They Say segment, where we will share how to price your business. Even if you don't intend on selling the company, you should have a concrete idea on what it could be worth if something were to happen to you. What would your family do? Do they know what to do? And then we'll share how taxes are factored into this for your closely held business. So much more good stuff's coming your way here on Protect Your Assets. Stay with us.
You can ask the Sandman questions and hear this show Protect Your Assets hands-free anytime on your Amazon Echo smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, ask Protect Your Assets to play the latest podcast. Find out more at libertygroupllc.com/voice.
Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman. Video killed the
radio star. Welcome back. Welcome back. I'm David Hollander, also known as the Sandman. And maybe you own your own business and you're thinking about selling, or maybe someone just called you, a competitor or a private equity firm. Or maybe your company's going public and you got a big IPO coming and you're going to get a big payout. Any of these sort of events can change your life. And today we're talking about privately owned businesses and how you set yourself up for success through that transaction, and then what you need to think about after it's over, because they do go hand in hand. And I find that a lot of bankers are really good at selling it and getting you money, but then what happens? Right? All of a sudden you have this big chunk of money and you haven't even thought about how you're going to live off of that or what you're going to do. So in my opinion, all these things go hand in hand, and you have to look at that entire situation for the rest of your life, because that's really what it's about. Now it's time for one of our fan favorite parts of the show, our They Say segment, where we debunk common myths, half-truths, and sometimes just bad advice that they say.
Who are they? What do they know that I don't? And what are they saying this week? There's only one man with all the answers, and here he is, David Hollander, the Sandman.
All right, so here's one they say. They say that your business should be priced based on the income that it earns. Could it be more involved than that? Yes, it can. Realize this. Different people that are looking to buy your businesses or companies use different methods. In fact, there are a number of different methods they use to price your company. And it's probably a good idea you understand these before you enter into the situation and with a particular buyer. So one way they do this is to compare the value of a publicly traded company to your privately held business if you're in the same sort of a market, if you will, same sort of a business. Gives you some sort of an idea of what the multiple would be. Another is to look at acquisitions of similar companies during this time period. Let's face it, we're in a growth market right now. There's a lot of cash out there floating around. And so if you're looking at valuations or exchanges that happened a year ago or a year and a half ago when markets weren't so great, right? Or maybe even 5 years ago, those probably aren't very good metrics to be using because you're in a different world today. So I would argue that your multiple should be higher today because your business, even though it may be similar to what sold in the past, isn't necessarily the same here in the future when there are so many dollars out there chasing good opportunities. Another, the third method is a discounted cash flow analysis. Now, what does that mean? Well, it forecasts the value of the purchase based on the anticipated future cash flow. And so this is really interesting. And this is why I talked about in the last segment about how you value your business and what are the steps you need to do to get yourself set up for that, because it really does follow this sort of a plan. And a lot of companies like to look at this. The longer you've been in business, the more we put your books in order to show a history of earnings that are consistent and sustainable and predictable, then the better your situation's going to be. It's really that simple. And so I see those businesses that have been around for a while, certainly through up and down economies, have a nice product niche, have a good client base, I mean, all these sort of things add dollars into your pocket. It's just that simple. So I talked earlier about that EBITDA. You know, what does that mean? It means earnings. You could write this down. This is the term you're going to hear a lot if you get into this sort of thing. It's called earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. It's really about the cash flow. And that's called EBITDA. And that's what they're going to use the multiple to value what you're going to end up putting in your pocket at the end of the day. Okay, that's what that means. And so they're going to look at things like if you have your business, what we call strong fundamentals. Are your customers loyal? Do they pay their bills on time? Do you have a better margin than, say, a competitor? Are you right in line with them? Or is your business maybe not quite where it should be, but let's face it, it's predictable, it's consistent. There's areas of improvement that with a better management team, it could do better. I mean, those sort of that's value. It's kind of a transparent value that you have to pull out of that transaction. These things can be difficult to understand, but let's face it, if you can put it in a way where a buyer sees that as attractive, an opportunity, well, guess what? You're going to get paid more. It's really that simple. So what are some other implications that you need to be aware of? Well, most small businesses organize as what's called pass-through entities. And I have this discussion a lot with people. I had one this week with a fellow who literally had a $300+ million deal going, and he didn't know when I asked him this question. And I step back a little bit because here's someone who's clearly very successful. I mean, he's done very well. He's very good at what he does. I see this time and time again. People are incredible at what they do. They just are. They're gifted. They're good at it. They figured out a way to monetize it. And now they're sitting on a pile of cash, right? It's that simple. But when you look at the simple things, they don't know. So like when I asked him, what is your corporate structure? He said, I'm not sure. And I said, okay, can you go grab your tax return? And he did. And I said, okay, what does it say at the top there? Okay, well, that's an S corporation. Oh, really? Okay, I didn't know that. Anyway, I'm not belittling the fact. It's just, it's important. If you have a pass-through entity, which could be an S corporation or a limited liability company or a limited liability partnership, any of those things are pass-through entities, meaning that when you earn money, that money doesn't get taxed at that level. It gets passed through to you as the business owner and you pay taxes one time. I like that in this sort of a transaction as opposed to a C corporation, because with a C corporation, you pay taxes at two levels. You pay taxes at the corporate level, and then when you distribute that cash down to you as the owner, you pay taxes again. Yeah, not so good. So a lot of times we may restructure your corporate situation before you enter into this transaction, because we don't want to pay too much in tax, right? Right, of course, makes sense. In general, you may want to structure this deal. This is very important. Listen to me carefully. I see this over and over again. It could be a $50 million transaction. It could be a $300 million transaction. We've seen these. We've done these. And this one issue is huge. You want to structure your deal so that more of the proceeds you receive are long-term capital gains, period, as opposed to ordinary income. I had a talk with someone this week who's going through this right now, and he did not know this. He just thought his accountant said it's all going to be ordinary income. Well, no, it's not. It doesn't have to be that way. I would prefer currently, I know we don't know what the government's going to do before the end of the year here. It's August right now. We're looking at December where we think they're going to change the tax rules. That's what they've been talking about. So I think December is going to be the hot month where a lot's going to happen quickly. So get ready for that. But right now, the long-term capital gain rate's 20%. That's the max federal. And if the proceeds are taxed as ordinary income, you could be looking this year at 37% federal tax. And yeah, you're going to add state of California to that because they're going to take their big bite, whether it's capital gain or ordinary income. So you could be paying 50% tax on this transaction. That wipes you out. I mean, all of a sudden you had $30 million in your pocket, but now it's really 15. Well, if we can change just one of those tax rates from 37 down to 20, that puts 17% more in your pocket just because you made the right decision. That could seriously change your life. Just that one decision alone. Now, what else could you do? Well, you could get all cash. You could get an all cash deal in this transaction. That puts very little risk on you, and most buyers don't like that. If you're looking at a private equity firm who's trying to roll something up and get bigger, well, they're going to try and give you some equity in the new company. That's just what they do, because that shifts more of the risk to you, because if that new company fails in the future, well, you just bought yourself some land and swamp in Florida, right? Or a lemon. I mean, those are the sort of things you just bought. So that's risk, and that puts risk on you. And if your future is dependent on that, you know, you want to know that before you finish this transaction. You know, you don't have to work with the law firm, by the way, either, that the buyers tell you you have to work for. You have to work with a lot of private equity or buyers will come in. They say, hey, you work with this law firm because we like them. No, You want a fiduciary. You want a lawyer representing your interest, who knows what you're trying to do, who's your advocate. And some of these fees from the lawyers they're going to refer you to could be $800,000. Moving on will be a lot easier if you know how you'll fill your time after the sale. Find out about this next. The answers are coming up. It always pays you to keep it tuned right here. We'll be right back.
You can ask the Sandman questions and hear this show protect your assets hands-free anytime on your Amazon Echo smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, ask Protect Your Assets to play the latest podcast. Find out more at libertygroupllc.com/voice. Now, back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back. I'm David Hollander, also known as the Sandman. And you are listening to Protect Your Assets. And isn't that name right now, Protect Your Assets, so relevant when markets are at all-time highs and we're just sitting around waiting for Humpty Dumpty? What are you going to do? Well, that reminds me, if you missed any of today's show, you can always go back and listen to our podcast where you can catch back up on what we've been talking about today, which is selling your business. And you can do that by going to pyaradio.com or on your smart app. Say, hey, Alexa, connect to Protect Your Assets and find out more. And even my secret message right there. Now, if you're just joining us and you own your own business, well, selling it could be one of the biggest decisions you make in your life. And so today we've been discussing how business owners can prepare for retirement and the transaction before they put their private business up for sale. Now, a lot of people are just going along doing their thing and they get a phone call or an email, and that's how it starts. Next thing you know, you're in a deal. It literally happens like that. So this morning we've been going along what this means to you, how it changes your life, and how you can get more money for what you've worked so hard to build. And I've seen this happen a lot. Getting a big chunk of money can literally change your life in many different ways. Most people think it's all glory, like a great quarterback getting a contract for $50 million, but it often just isn't that. Most of my clients come from humble beginnings that didn't include fame, fortune. And selling a business can be like grieving, the grieving process when you lose somebody who you really care about. Most of my clients have built their businesses up with their own personal blood, sweat, and tears, and it's not easy to let go. But moving on could be easier, I said easier, if you know how you're going to fill your time after the transaction. So many of my clients wait a few years before maybe starting another business. Some continue to work for the company as an employee or an independent consultant for a period of time, even after the business is sold. And if that's your plan, then I recommend you work those details out in writing, please. during the negotiations. And I recommend writing these down before you enter in the transaction, just to, again, plan what's going on. Listen, if you need help, we can help you develop a strategy to maximize the amount of money you're going to get for your business. Big thanks to my team, because without my team, I'm just another pretty voice on the radio. You've been listening to the Protect Your Assets Show. I am David Hollander, the Sandman. Go out and make the rest of your life the best of your life.
All calls have been screened. Callers should not expect their conversations with David Hollander on the radio or with staff to be held in confidence. And that legal information provided on the air is not intended to be a substitute for callers hiring their own lawyers to advise them about personal legal matters. Proper advice depends on complete analysis of all the facts and circumstances. The information given on this program is in the nature of general financial comment and cannot be relied upon as pertaining to your specific financial situation. California Life Agent number 0B48569. Listeners should consult their own financial advisor or conduct their own due diligence before making any financial decisions. The preceding program was paid for by Liberty Group, LLC. The views and the opinions of the host do not represent those of this station or its ownership. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.